Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. Very happy to see so many people here today. It's the second time I give this lecture here, and I'm very happy to see that still so many people came. I guess it's a proof that I'm about to talk about maybe the most, or one of the most popular living artists nowadays, Anselm Kiefer. I have to admit to you before I start that it's quite a challenge to talk about 30 years of oeuvre, 30 years of creation of a very, very fertile artist in 40 minutes plus 5 minutes for question. So I will try to summarize it and give you a bit, I'd say, of a tasting of the work of Anselm Kiefer. And I'll give you some representative works of Anselm Kiefer. Anselm Kiefer was born in 1945 in Donaueschingen in Germany, in the southern part of Germany, in a part that later on would be part of the Federal Republic of Germany, of West Germany. He was born only a few months after the war, so he was born into destruction and devastation that he witnessed already as a child. In interviews, Kiefer says that already since the time he was a kid, he knew that he wanted to be an artist. He said that he always knew that this was his only way out of the middle-class Catholic environment into which he was born. As you see, the title of my lecture is An Expanding Universe, the Work of Anselm Kiefer. And this somehow mathematical diagram that you see in front of you on the screen summarizes the logic of my lecture. Unlike other artists who use specific themes in specific periods in their career and whose work can be charted chronologically, Kiefer's work is very hard to be talked at in terms of chronology because he uses and reuses themes in different periods of his life. He can introduce a theme, let's say in the 70s, and 20 years later go back to the same theme. So as many art historians have pointed out already, it's easier to talk about Kiefer thematically than chronologically, and this is exactly what I'll do today. The diagram that you see on the screen is made out of four concentric shapes, or four spheres. You see there is a kernel here, and it says here, myself. Then you have another sphere that says artist, another sphere around it that says German culture, another sphere around it, humanity, and the last sphere, the largest sphere, the widest sphere, is called universe. Now, I know it may look a bit weird at this moment, but I'm sure that by the end of the lecture, the logic of my lecture would be clear to you. This diagram is basically a generalization of Kiefer's main interest, as I understand them. And you can see that the difference between the degradation between those spheres has to do with a degree of intimacy. In other words, when Kiefer creates a work of art that tests or researches into himself, into his ethics, into his morals, this is a very intimate type of interrogation. While when he creates a work that ask questions about the universe, the cosmos, it's on a lesser degree of intimacy. This is not a dogma, I want you to keep in mind. It's just a little diagram that I drew a few days ago, and it's a little diagram that basically is a game. It's just a game that I'm playing with myself. It's a mental game in order to sort out Kiefer's themes into mental drawers. So let's start now. In 1969, Kiefer, still a student, he's 24 years old, he poses himself in front of the camera lens wearing a paramilitary uniform and giving the Nazi salute, as you can see in both photos, in front of different monuments in Europe, in different places in Europe. He travels, he goes to France, to Switzerland, he goes to Italy, and he takes his own photos in front of these monuments. he doesn't really take any public pictures of himself in this uniform giving the Nazi salute within Germany. One of the reasons for that is that it is still illegal to perform the Nazi salute in Germany. But he does take, and you can see him here in front of the Colosseum in Rome. You can see him on the coast, I think in Switzerland and on another building. And you can see him here. And this is probably one of the only pictures he took in Germany and all performing, giving the Nazi salute, wearing the uniform. And all these photos that were taken in Germany were taken within the studio space, his own studio. They were not taken publicly. In 1969, as you can see, there are different titles to these images. This is called Tu Gêné, this one too, and this one is called as Heroic Symbols. In 1962, Kiefer incorporated these images in artist books that he created, and this is the moment to tell you that Kiefer is a very, very diversified artist. He's an artist who creates in, works of art in many medias. He creates paintings and sculptures and books and installations. And actually, the creation of books is very, very important to Kiefer. He creates books from different materials and on different scales. And he actually says that about 60% of his creation is dedicated to the creation of books. And the reason why I put you this one is so you could see how he pastes those images in on the book pages, and sometimes he writes something next to them. So this is what he did with his photos in 1969, incorporated them in his own little books that he made. It was in 1975 that he published these images in an avant-garde magazine called Interfunktionen. The publication of these images in 1975 created a big scandal, and this magazine was boycotted. And I think that in order to understand the scandal that this created, we have to think of the historical context of the publication of these images. It's not only illegal to give the Nazi salute in Germany back then, but let's think of the late 60s, 1969, the beginning of the 70s, and Willy Brandt is elected to be the Chancellor of West Germany. And Willy Brandt, as most of you probably know, started then to initiate his own a policy of what is now called Ostpolitik. In other words, he wanted to create a normalization with the Eastern Bloc. He wanted to overcome the division that has been created after the Second World War with the entire Western world divided into West and East. And he wanted to create some normal relationship between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc. And many people supported this policy. But some people felt that this policy would make it easier for people to forget why is there this division, what led to this division. And this division, some believed, is a lesson for history, is a lesson for people to remember what happened, why this happened. And so when Kiefer in 1969 and 1975 creates those work that provoke those repressed memories and talks about and shows things that people don't want to think of, he's creating a big scandal. And some people blamed him, and they told him that he's a fascist, and he is a Nazi lover and Nazi supporter. But I think that these people basically ignored the aesthetic content of these images. Take a look at Kiefer in front of the Colosseum. His unkempt uniform, uncombed hair. He's not a heroic, athletic soldier. We don't see any army around him, any other soldiers, any weapons. People go around. I mean, nobody seems to notice him. You see, there's one person here who doesn't even notice the conquest of the so-called fascist Hitler. And also an image such as this that he took in his studio, next to which he wrote in the book, when he published it, he wrote, "Walking on water, an experiment in the bathtub in the house of the studio." So, but take a look what's happening here. Do you see Kiefer is standing on a bathtub filled with water? The title says walking on water. The allusion is quite clear, right? We know who is known to have walked on water. But when you look closely, you see that he's not walking on water. He's just standing on a mound of bricks. There are bricks in the water, and I don't know if you can see it in this reproduction, but it's quite clear when you look at it close that he's just standing on bricks inside the water. So more than a demonstration of wonder and grandeur here, what we have here is a comment on delusions of grandeur, I would say. And I would say that it would be unjust to accuse Kiefer of being a fascist here. And let me quote you a few things that Kiefer said, and I paraphrase them, I put them all together, in regards to this series. Many people accused him of being a fascist, etc. He said, "I don't identify with Hitler. I need to reenact what they did just a little bit in order to understand the madness. In those early pictures, I wanted to evoke the question for myself. Am I a fascist? That's very important. You cannot answer quickly. Authority, competition, superiority, these are facets of me like everyone else." And recently in an interview he said, "Today I count myself among the perpetrators because today I simply cannot know what I would have done then. Anything is possible with people, thus my dismay." So if we go back to the diagram that I showed you at the beginning, and remember that the kernel, the core, was myself, I would want to say that this work or this series of works are an investigation, a research, a testing of Kiefer's own self, his own morals, his own ethics. It's not the big, I don't think that he's asking here the big questions about German history or Nazi history. He's simply asking these questions about himself, what I would have done if I had lived in this period. So this belonged to the kernel, to the core of my diagram, myself. And we see how Kiefer here basically learns history, as he said, through his own body. By the way, Kiefer presented these works in the final examination at the Karlsruhe Academy of Fine Arts, to which he attended, and the committee of professors did not approve of these works. They found them unacceptable. Except for one professor, whose name was Kuchenmeister, who actually survived the concentration camp. And he apparently was the only one, according to Kiefer, really understood what he was trying to do there, and he did approve of these works of art. Let's go to the next work. The title of this work, as you can see, is Bilderstreit, Iconoclastic Struggle. It's from 1980. Let's take a look at this image. You see that we have this wooden floor here, and we recognize this space as the artist's studio. In many images of the period, Kiefer portrays his own studio, and we know from these images and pictures that he had a wooden floor there. We also know that he had this brick wall that you can see just in the background here. So on the studio floor, basically, we have three tanks. One, two, three tanks. Can you all see them? And we see that there's a representation of something that may look like fire, this may look like smoke, and it's very clear we've just entered a war zone. And in order to analyze this picture, I would like to compare it with another image. I think that this would bring the message in a more clear manner. Take a look at the image on the left, this one, the black and white reproduction. This is a mural painting by Ferdinand Spiegel, a Nazi painter from 1938-1939, and the title is Tank. And the similarity is quite clear. We see a few tanks here in the foreground of the picture climbing a hill in our direction, in the spectator's direction. They look very mighty, very powerful. We see that there's smoke behind them to suggest that there's an entire army to follow behind them. At the top part of the composition, I hope you can all see there's another army. This is the Prussian army of the past, defeating his own enemies here. And we see how these mythic ancestors fight in unison with the modern army, with the modern Nazi army. We see how the history of Germany is called in order to win the war. It's a very glorious, I would say, depiction of war. And then when we compare these two pictures, we can see the difference. These three tanks are nothing but clay models, small miniature clay models that Kiefer created and photographs in his own studio. This is a mixed media. He photographed the scene that he installed in his studio and he painted over it. And what we have here is basically a lost battle because, look, the cannons of the tanks are facing each other. So instead of winning the war together and fighting together, these tanks are shooting at each other. Instead of the glorious army of Hitler, instead of the glorious army that you see on the painting to the left, we have a lost battle on the studio floor. It's not even outside. And the reference in the title, by the way, Iconoclastic Struggle, is to the Orthodox Church's policy in the 8th and 9th century after Christ. They were fighting against the use of figurative images in a religious setting. They were afraid that the holy figures represented in those images would be venerated as such. They were afraid of idolatry. So during these long periods in the Middle Ages, they banned the use of figurative art. And the reference is here. So this brings us back to the message of this picture. This is not a real war against enemies. This is an art war. This is a war of images. And this work for itself, I think, talks about the nature of art, the nature of what it means to be an artist, what is the essence of the artistic creation. It's a war. It's a battle. And Kiefer himself, I'm quoting, said, I became aware that for visible results, I give up much better ones. So I'm always unsatisfied. And here we are in the first sphere of my mathematical diagram. First, we saw work where Kiefer researches his own self, his own ethics, his own morals. And now we have another type of work that researches not only Kiefer's self, but also the artistic sphere. What does it mean to be an artist? What is an artistic creation? And what does artistic creation involve? Now we're looking at a work, actually it's a watercolor from 1982, and the title is To the Unknown Painter. This is actually at MoMA's collection, and it's part of a series that Kiefer initiated in 1980. The building that you see is one of the two temples of the Nordic heroes of the Eternal Guard that were built in Munich in 1935 by Paul Ludwig Troost under Hitler's commission. Take a look at these pictures here. I reproduced again the same watercolor here to the left, but these black and white images actually show, these are documentary images from the 30s of this temple that is represented here. And I think you can see the similarity. So the temples of the Nordic heroes of the Eternal Guard, as they were called, were built to honor the 16 members of the National Socialist Party who were killed in the failed beer hall putsch of 1923 that I'm sure you're all familiar with. And you see this colonnade, this row of pillars? This was built around, as you can see in the image, the tombs, the coffins of those 16 heroes, so to say. And take a look at what Kiefer did. He kept the architecture, he kept the colonnade, but instead of those tombs here, instead of the sarcophags, he put a pallet mounted on a pole. It's a bit hard to see in this reproduction, I know. Maybe here it's clearer. You see there's a pallet here, and it's put on a pole. Now, some of you would want to argue with me, it doesn't look like a cup pallet, it looks like a blotch of paint, but since Kiefer created an entire series with the same motif, we can recognize by now that this is a pallet on a pole. In other paintings that he made, it's more clear that this is a pallet, so you'll have to take my word for it. And what he created is basically a monument for the unknown painter. And the reference, of course, is to all these monuments that we know to the unknown soldier. And as Kiefer said, he deliberately created an absurd, because a painter in its nature, in the nature of the profession, is a public figure. It's not an unknown figure such as the small soldier, one of thousands or millions, etc. Lisa Saltzman, who wrote a very interesting book on Kiefer, sees in this palette a symbol of the victimized artist trapped within the government will and projects. And we can think of an artist such as Fernand Spiegel that I just showed you. And we can say, well, in order to survive, in order to get the permission to create his works of art, he may have been forced to create propaganda, to create works of art that would support his own government. But we can also think here of another artist, another somehow unknown or failed artist come soldier, to the unknown painter and the unknown soldier, who is Hitler. You probably all know that Hitler wanted to be an artist, and he did not succeed in that. So it's very interesting to see how with Kiefer we'd never get an easy ready-made message. It always a little bit ambiguous, and Kiefer always makes us think. It doesn't give us simple message, simple images, didactic images. By the way, Kiefer told an interviewer that he actually studied quite thoroughly the, I would say, so-called fine art of the Nazi era. And he did not find any inspiration in it. He did not find any interest in their paintings and their retrograde sculptures. But what really did interest him was Nazi architecture. And he believed that some of those monumental buildings that were built by Hitler and his architects to supposedly last forever were actually interesting, and their proportion was interesting. And he believed that these buildings should not have been bombed by the Allies as they had been at the end of the war. You know, the Allies bombed those monuments in order to prevent the possibility that one day people would come there to venerate Hitler or the Nazi past. So they just bombed them with dynamite. And Kiefer believes that these buildings should not have been bombed. Instead, they should have been transformed in our mind. They should have been kept as they were, but transformed. And this is exactly what Kiefer is doing here when he puts the palette in the midst of this monument to the unknown soldier. He puts the palette instead of coffins. He makes us think, and he transforms the meaning of this building into something new. So here we're dealing, I would suggest, with the second sphere. We had the colonel, myself. Kiefer interrogates his own self. Then we had the nature of art or the nature of being an artist. And now, in the second sphere, we had another issue, the issue of German history and German culture. And we see how Kiefer here deals with something which is less intimate than the research of am I a fascist, for example, or less intimate, I would suggest, than the question of what does it mean to be an artist. Here it deals with something wider, which is Nazi German history and culture. Let's take a look at another work. This work is also at MoMA's collection, and the title is impossible for me to pronounce, Ways of Worldly Wisdom, Arminius Battel. It's from 1978. It's also part of a series that Kiefer made, and the first part of the title, Ways of Worldly Wisdom, actually refers to a Catholic essay written in 1924 by a Jesuit priest called Bernard Jensen. The second part, Arminius's Battle, refers to the myth of Hermann, Arminius in Latin, Hermann in German. It's the oldest German hero who defeated the Romans when they tried to conquer Germanic territories. And over the years, Hermann has become a national symbol of German freedom, of German identity. And you can see Hermann here. This is Hermann. But you can see that there are other figures here, there are other faces, other portraits that we have here. So this is a multi-figure composition. And it's a picture that is made out of unrelated portraits, people of different histories, as you can see from their hairdo and their costume sometimes. Take a look at the figure here or here and this one. We understand that they're from different period, and they're also people of different ideologies, but they all come from the history of Germany. And in many ways, this is a sort of a group portrait, except that these people are not put in the same space in order to be painted as we would expect of a group portrait, and they're not of the same time, as I told you. There's one thing that may unite all these people, and I hope you can all see this circular form here. Here. And some people wanted to suggest that this is a palette again. And here you can see there's a fire in the center, and some people suggested that this fire is a reference to a part of the story of Hermann, of the fire that was provoked in the Teutoburg forest while Hermann was defeating the Romans who were trying to conquer the land. We could identify a few of them. This is Immanuel Kant, for example. This is Hermann, as you know. This is Queen Louisa, who was a Prussian queen in the 19th century, around the 19th century. So we have different figures here from different periods, and since it's a series, they were all identified, and some people identify some Nazi leaders in there or some resistant warriors. So you can see that it's a very, very diversified portrait, and it's a very, I'd say, diversified portrait of Germany. And it's a puzzle of German history, I would say. And then the title, Ways of Worldly Wisdom. Kiefer said when you look at this picture, you would imagine that all these people that come from the entire history of Germany, all their wisdom would amount to what we would want to call worldly wisdom, a wisdom of the world. But this is, of course, absurd because this does not exist, Kiefer say, a worldly wisdom. And we see how the text, the title, which is, by the way, inscribed on the picture itself, challenges the painting Kiefer painted. And Kiefer once said, my biography is a biography of Germany. And I think that this explains this type of exploration here. And we, again, are dealing with German history with the second sphere of the diagram. 1983, Kiefer visits Israel. And after this visit, he starts studying Talmud and Kabbalah. And all of a sudden, Jewish themes start popping up in his works of art. But not only Jewish themes. In the 80s, we see that Kiefer opens up maybe more to the world and more to other issues, less intimate than the research of himself or the nature of art or the history of Germany, but something wider. And I hope you remember, and we'll see the diagram at the end again, and everything will sit back together. But the other sphere, the next sphere, is humanity. So we find works that whose interest is Judaism, mysticism, other cultures, foreign religions, cultures, myth, foreign types of knowledge and understanding of the world. And this is an example to a work that deals with Kabbalah. And the title, which is actually inscribed on the painting itself, is Tzimtzum. It's from 1990. Now, Tzimtzum means, in Hebrew, retraction. And we know that Kiefer started reading Isaac Luria. Isaac Luria, in the 12th century, wrote his own Kabbalistic theory. And he was dealing with the creation of the world. He created an alternative story to the story that we find in the book of Genesis, in which God created the world. Because he believed that there was a problem with this story. If God created the world, how can it be so evil, so mean, so hard to live in? How can it be, Isaac Luria believed that, how can it be that the Jews were expelled from Spain in the 12th century, and we know later on again? So he wanted to explain the evil that exists in the world, and without putting, let's say, the blame on God, because this is, of course, impossible to him. So according to Luria, God did not actually create the world. All he did was he made some place. He withdrew in order to create the world. Because if God is what they call in Kabbalah, in Hebrew, Ein Sof, infinite, endless, it means that there's no place for the creation of the world, for the creation of something different than God, if God is infinite, right? So according to Luria, God had to withdraw and make space for the world to be created, to create itself. And this act of withdrawal, of retraction, is Tzimtzum, exactly the title of this work. And once the world is created, then, only then, God will pour his mercy in the shape, in the form of a very bright light, infinite light. Kiefer said, unlike the stories from the Bible, that you can easily illustrate, beautifully illustrate with a donkey and a camel and a tent and the virgin, Kabbalah is a purely intellectual construction. There is no images to how God withdrew into himself in order for the world to be created. So this was, for him, was a big challenge, to create something which is imageless. And I want to draw your attention to this analogy or similarity between one creator to another. And a lot of artists refer to their work or to the work, or compare their own act of creation to a somehow godly creation on different degrees. Now, if you look at this picture, you see it's not just canvas and paint. There's lead on the surface of the work. I hope you can all see it. And Kiefer introduced lead for the first time in 1978, the first time he used lead in his works of art. And ever since, he uses it quite regularly. And when the Cologne Cathedral was being renovated, they took off from the roof strips and pieces of lead that covered the roof. And then Kiefer acquired those pieces of lead, and you can imagine it's a huge amount of lead that he acquired. And he believed that this was an absurd, the fact that a Gothic church was covered with lead. He said, to cover a Gothic cathedral with lead, to lock up the forms that aspire heavenwards with a hermetic lead, for him, it was an absurd that something that wants to aspire towards heaven or to get the heavenly inspiration and the rays of light is covered with such an opaque, heavy type of metal. Well, through which no rays of light or whatever could go, nothing could go through. I want to show you another work, and now we're dealing with the sphere called humanity, almost the penultimate sphere, one before the last one. And this one is called The Breaking of the Vessels, and I'm showing you this work because it relates to the other work, and it somehow it makes some sort of a conclusion of what we talked before. It's another work that deals with Kabbalah. The inspiration comes from Kabbalah. And remember, I told you that once God creates the created the world according to Kabbalah, he poured his own mercy into the world, this infinite light. And this light was poured into specific type of receptacles that are called in Hebrew kelim. And these kelim, these receptacles, were supposed to obtain, to get the divine light. But these receptacles somehow broke. And this explains the nature of why the world, one of the explanations why the world is not so perfect. And the breaking of the vessels that I just told you about is called Shvirat HaKelim. It depends in which work. Sometimes the title is in Hebrew, like we saw in the other one, Tzimtzum. Here, in the book where I found it, it was in English. So, but know the other title, Shvirat HaKelim. So take a look at this work. We have huge books made out of lead put on this bookcase. On the floor, you can see the shattered glass, maybe to signify the breaking of the vessels. Here we have some sort of a glass part of the composition of the work itself that may look like a halo to some people. To some other people, it relates to other issues of Kabbalah called Sefirot. And I would suggest that this is because I told you that Kiefer is an artist who is interested in many media, and you see that this is more than just a sculpture, it's an entire installation. And now Kiefer makes even larger installation, huge installation, room size and building sizes. take a look at the materials. Well, he uses here again lead, which is again a very heavy material, very malleable material, opaque material. At the same time, he uses glass in the same work of art. And just think of those, the difference between those two materials. Glass is transparent. It's very rigid. You can't just ply it like you could do with lead. Create some sort of tension within the work of art. Lead is also maybe a reference here because I was talking about the sphere of humanity. It's not just an interest in Judaism or Kabbalah or mysticism. It's interest in other forms of knowledge and other cultures, and maybe a reference here to alchemy. Kiefer is very interested in alchemy, and as you probably know, lead is the base matter, primary matter that the alchemists want to transform into pure metals like gold or silver. So again, it's another reference that may be here. Also, lead is usually associated in Western culture with the specific god and planet of Saturn. And Saturn is usually associated with melancholy. And melancholy is usually associated all the way through the Renaissance, etc., with the nature of the artist and the creation of the artist. So it's a very wide, these are very wide questions that are being posed in this kind of work of art. Here, we're dealing with the last sphere. And the last sphere was the universe, if you remember. And here we're dealing with other more universal, less intimate questions than myself or German history, etc. And this work that you see in front of you belongs again to a series of works that Kiefer made, and they're all dedicated to Robert Flood, as you can see in the little caption next to it. This is a series of photographs that he reproduced in an artist book again, like the books that he made for, not like the lead books that we saw in The Breaking of the Vessels, but the books with the pictures of himself giving the Nazi salute, this kind of an artist book that you can flip and take a look at the pictures and read what's written in there. And Robert Flood was actually an English philosopher and a scientist from the 17th century. And Robert Flood was interested in the harmony of the cosmos, in the harmonious relationship between every entity in the cosmos. So he believed that he said every plant, he wrote, every plant has its related star in the sky. So there's some sort of an harmony between what's on our planet and elsewhere. And it was a connection between the micro and macro cosmos, between the smallest units on the planet and the largest one. And think of the sunflowers that Kiefer photographed here. Sunflower moves in relation to the sun, right? This is why it's called sunflower. So it reflects in many ways the relation between the sun and the plant. And as Robert Flood wrote, every plant has its related star in the sky. And so Kiefer represents those sunflowers in different seasons, different times of the year. And you can see it's a bit hard, but maybe from the second from the bottom, you can see that we see all the seeds of the sunflower. So the sunflower reflects with its seeds. It's like the blackened reflection of the stars. It's like the constellation within one plant that reflects the entire universe. One more work called Sternenlager, number 4, Star Camp. I put it in English because I think, I put it in German because it has different meanings and association in the German title. This is a very monumental work. What you see here is the basement, or a cave, I would even say, in the studio complex of Kiefer in Barjac in France, where he lives. And it's a storage place, basically. You see there are shelves or boxes. And each box or shelf is numbered. I don't know if you can see it from where you are, but later you could approach it. There's number on each shelf or box here. These numbers are actually the real numbers that NASA scientists use in order to describe the stars. Each star has a number, a name. And so we see an interest here. We're in the last sphere of universe, an interest here in astronomy in another form of knowledge, the knowledge of the universe, the knowledge of the stars. At the same time, I want you to keep in mind that even though Kiefer is very interested in astronomy, he's quite ambivalent towards it. He's very cautious. He said basically the constellation is something that men drew in order to make an order in this world. There are no lines in the sky between the stars, right? The stars don't have numbers. It's something that men made in order to make an order, to understand. It's an illusion, he said. And he said that with all this science that we accumulate over the years, what humanity accumulates is not knowledge. It's an accumulation of ignorance. So there's always this ambivalence towards it. And one last thing that I wanted to point out in this picture, you see here, hung from the ceiling, there's an irregular polyhedron. And the reference here, here I put you a picture of this painting in installation so you would see the real effect of this painting, how when you stand in front of it, you're almost taken in the space, into the space of the picture. But the reference with the polyhedron is to this very famous print by Albrecht Dürer, and a very famous German printmaker called Melancholia, number one. There's a print of Melancholia here at the Metropolitan in New York. And what we see here is the personification of the winged figure of melancholy. You see the woman here. She sits here. And she's there's a lot of objects around her. We don't have time to discuss them. A lot of them refer to the different sciences as they were understood in the 16th century. But some of them also refer to alchemy. And remember, I mentioned alchemy with lead. And the polyhedron is here. Can you all see this shape? Just here. And you can see it again at Kiefer. So a reference here not only to German history and culture with the work of Dürer, but also to humanity, to other forms of knowledge, to alchemy, and to melancholy in the nature of the artist. The title also is very enigmatic because it's called Starcamp, Sternenlager. And one association that could come to mind is may have to do again with the history of Germany, star, a camp, maybe the reference to astronomy, but also star, to the yellow stars the Jews were forced to wear during the war and camp, concentration camp, and it's not so far-fetched when we think of the work of Kiefer, which is very interested in it. So this kind of work, this with all the spheres that I dealt with the self, with the artistic creation, with German culture, with humanity, and with the universe. Our time is up now. I hope you really, really enjoyed and understood. And here, take a look at the diagram again. I hope you really understood what I wanted to say about the nature of intimacy, the different degrees of intimacy in the works of Kiefer. And I hope you enjoyed our journey from the microcosmos to the macrocosmos, from the myself of Kiefer to the universe. Now, I know our time is up. I'll just leave time for two more questions, and if you have more questions, just approach me later. Yes.
What is your interpretation of his burnt landscape paintings?
It's very interesting. I didn't show these today. There are many interpretations to them. He creates a landscape, someone to identify in a German landscape, and burns it. He has actually a painting called Burning. Painting equals burning. Again, it could be another exploration of the nature of artistic creation. Painting means burning. In order to create, you need to destroy. It may be a reference to German history. In order to create, you need to destroy. And think of Hitler. Think of, he refers also to Nero, the Roman emperor who wanted to reconstruct the entire Rome, but then burned it before. I can keep on talking about it, but I hope this answers in a nutshell your question. Yes, one last question.
He would develop his conscience about the Holocaust. He indicated several things, but could you connect the dots?
I'll just repeat the question in case some of you didn't hear.
How did Kiefer develop his conscience about the Holocaust?
How did Kiefer develop his conscience about the Holocaust? Kiefer was born in 1945, a few months before the Second World War was ended in Germany. He was born into a country in a state of destruction. He saw around him monuments ruined, cities bombed, people wandering on the streets, homeless people, soldiers coming back from war with no clothes, nowhere to go, no mental stability sometimes. So it would be pretentious of myself to explain how did Kiefer develop his consciousness of the Holocaust. He was born into it. He was born into an atmosphere where nobody talks about the Holocaust. Where in school,
how conscious of the Holocaust was he?
That's a very good question. So in school, exactly, Kiefer said, when I learned in school, we didn't learn about the Nazi period, about the Holocaust. We learned about it in a short period, like something negligible from the history. They didn't really deal with it. His parents, the family, the adults, they didn't want to talk about the period. So he had to explore the history with his own body, as you saw with the occupation, the first work that he created when he posed himself with those paramilitary uniform. Thank you very much for coming here today. Yeah.